WIOX is supported by Delaware County Solid Waste Management Center on State Route 10 in Walton, open Tuesday through Saturday for disposal and recycling. Reminding residents and long-term visitors, please wear a mask and observe 6-foot social distancing at the center. Delaware County Solid Waste Management Center, hours of operation and information about materials and disposal fees at 607-832-5800. WIOX is supported by Roxbury Wine and Spirits on Main Street in Roxbury. Open every day except Sunday from 12 noon to 6 p.m. for contactless curbside pickup or delivery to your open vehicle trunk or hatchback. Selection of wines listed at RoxburyWineAndSpirits.com. Orders by phone or email 607-326-6200 or Jeff@RoxburyWineAndSpirit.com. WIOX is supported by the Andes Hotel, Restaurant, and Bar, open Tuesday through Sunday for indoor dining or heated outdoor dining on the porch. Southern Cooking on Tuesdays, Wings on Wednesdays, Surf and Turf on Friday. Menus and reservations, theandeshotel.com. Or 845-676-4408. 845-676-4408.
I'm Dennison. I host Through the Looking Glass, where I discuss issues of culture, politics, and the environment with a little music on the side. Monday morning, 9 to 10, right here on WIOX Roxbury Community Radio, live and local in the Catskill Mountains at 91.3 FM. MTC Cable Channel 20 and WIOXRadio.org.
WIOX Community Radio, live and local in the Catskill Mountains at 91.3 FM and MTC Cable Channel 20. And anywhere at WIOXRadio.org, where it's easy to donate if you like what you hear. You can also get WIOX on any smart device through the Radio FM app. This is From the Forest. Every Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m., we talk about a different forest-related topic. And every third Wednesday, we talk to Gary Mead of Gary Mead Gallery in Margaritaville, New York. And Gary, what's up?
Well, we've had a great winter so far.
We've had a real winter, right? So it's, I hear people say.
Yeah, it's been, it reminds me of when I was growing up on the farm. This is the kind of winters that I was used to growing up with. And I don't think we've had anything near this for 10 years or so. We didn't get any, but that's one thing we did miss this year is the January run with the sap.
Well, that's one thing we didn't get was the January thaw. No January thaw.
We didn't get it. It snuck by us.
Well, it came early. It was a end of December thaw.
Yeah, and I think the sap did run a little. Didn't Ryan say something about he?
Well, Ryan told us, I don't know when he did it. I don't think it was for that time frame, but sometime in mid-January, he tapped one tree in his yard.
Just as a barometer.
As a barometer, just to kind of gauge what the trees were doing.
Yeah.
I guess he told
me. But this year, there were no January thaw at all. And I mean, yesterday, I think the sap might have run here and there for some people, but, you know, that was a, you know, one day's pretty short, and didn't run last night or today.
Well, I mean, anybody who was tapped early, it serves a purpose, you know. Maybe not to make a lot of maple syrup, but at least get the kinks worked out.
Yeah.
I know Ryan tapped, was ready for that and was hoping for that, and I'm doing the same for this coming weekend, and I hope to get a small spurt of sap, small amount, maybe 10 gallons or so, just enough to get the kinks worked out, remember how to work my process, because everybody's processes are a little different, even though it's the same
end result you want. But you just moved, too.
I'm in a new house and new evaporator I bought this year. Not brand new, but I purchased a new used evaporator.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And so that's going to be new. Mm-hmm. I've never fired it up before, so I actually think the...
And that's a wood-fired?
Wood-fired. I think this one of these nights this week I'm going to... I don't know, put 10 or 15 gallons of water through it and just boil some water and make sure I know what's going on with it before I get the real deal in there.
Mm-hmm. So how big of a pan is that?
18 inches by 48 inches. So.
And it's two pans or one
pan? One pan, but it's got a preheater feeding pan to it.
Right, okay, yeah. It's on the one side or the other.
No, it sits on the top near the flue, actually.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And then you can turn
runs
a valve
into the pan. But do you have... one big wide pan, or is there corrugations in between it?
Right, so it's one flat pan. There's no flues to it.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Or, yeah.
Because, that's back when we boiled. Well, we had the huge setup, so ran into the back pan with the fins hanging down in the fire, and then it ran into the front pan, which had four corrugations in it.
Sure, and you can get up to three times or more efficiency out of that just by increasing the surface area. So they do make other pans for this evaporator, and I'll see how it goes this year. I've seen them used for sale before, and, you know, in the off-season you can get good deals. Maybe I'll keep my eye out, but I don't know. I'm perfectly content with what I'm doing because it's 100 times better than what I had.
Well, the colder the winter, the sweeter the sap. That's what my grandpa always told me, and so the sap should be pretty sweet this year.
Well, and if not for the winter, definitely for last summer. We got a lot of sunlight on those trees.
Yep.
Unlike the last 3 or 4 years, it's been so rainy and gray. And I just think that a lot of maple producers think that, you know, they're not photosynthesizing quite as much in those gray days. And
well, they don't. I mean, remember that 1 year, 3 years ago, it was cloudy all summer. We hardly saw any sun. You know, our apples come on and the blossoms, and they started. I mean, I had a tree by my house that had thousands of apples on it. I mean, they always some drop off, and, you know, by fall, I might have got a half a bushel off that tree.
Yeah, it was a lot of fungus spread from those damp
days.
That,
no sun, and, you know, when the tree is surviving for... I'm writing a children's book about photosynthesis. I'm about... I actually introduced it here a few months back on the radio, what I had written so far, but that was might have been a year ago even, but now that was the year that happened, like, and everybody's wondering why the apples dropped off the trees. And when the tree is trying to survive, it gets rid of its leaves, and first the fruit that goes, that's the first thing to go, and then it'll start dropping leaves because it don't have enough energy. And it's basically trying to keep itself from dying, because if it tries to go on, it will actually get so stressed out that it'll kill the tree.
Yeah, well, like I said, there's definitely a lot of fungal spread, and it's casting leaves for that purpose as well. It all goes into saving itself, you're right.
Well, this year we had an awesome spring, summer, and autumn. And now our winter, we had this old-fashioned winter. You can go out in the woods and dig down to the soil, and it's not frozen. And that's big. And, you know, I don't think a lot of people realize how important that is for our landscape, because we get these cold winters with no snow, and, you know, frost gets into the roots, and you know, the trees will survive it, but they're really not comfortable with it. And, you know, back in the old days, but the only thing intimidating about this, you know, snow we have now, I mean, the first band of snow came off really too fast, and, you know, there's places with these snowstorms that we've had 3, 5, 12 inches, you know, 5, 8 inches, and blah, blah, and, you know, down here it packs down in the valleys, but up in the mountains, you know, the dark side where it don't get sun, that snow is just lays there like the day it was put there.
Yeah, and you're not kidding.
We're pushing 6 feet up in the top of our mountains.
Yeah, I've taken the snowmobile out for a few rides the last 2 weeks. And
we don't want to get that stuck up there.
Oh, man, you get in the hilltops, and there's a lot of snow there.
Yeah, we used to, when we snowmobiled, if we stopped on a hill and went to start again, and
forget
it would bury you, there's nothing. I mean, that is so, you know, back when you're young and can take it, but boy, digging them out and getting them turned around and, you know, waist deep or deeper snow, you know, just to get going again. But as long as you don't stop, you can go on forever. But,
yeah, and stay on the trail.
Yeah, and stay on the trail.
I'm usually not the first one out, we'll put it that way. We'll let somebody else break the trail.
Yeah. And pack it down, yeah.
So, Gary, before we get off syrup, are you going to tap any sycamore this year?
I am. We talked about it on the way up, and, you know, I haven't had, you know, the first year I did it, I was amazed with the progress and the results, and I haven't been able to do it since.
Doesn't that drive you nuts?
And it does.
You just can't duplicate something?
Well, the year it did run, and I brought it to you, and we had it, I put it through your reverse osmosis, and I brought it home, and geez, everything was going wonderful. And, you know, about 2:30 in the morning, I fell asleep, and I woke up to, you know, not a real good smell in my house. And I said, oh, damn. And I did. I burnt it. So I shut the thing off. I went up to bed and said, geez, you know, that whole year was wasted. And it didn't run again after that. I mean, that was a year you were... They wouldn't run for you, but, you know, I come over and I have about...
I think 11, you had 12 gallons or something.
12 gallons, yeah.
Which, you know, if anybody doesn't know, sycamore is... We've had several shows on it, or at least talking about it now, and since 2017
yeah.
or so is when you first made it, and then that got my attention. So I tried it in 2018, and you made a product that tasted like butterscotch candy, and I made a product that tasted like honey, which, nothing bad about that, but...
Well, they say the earlier stuff makes honey, the later stuff will... Because I didn't tap, the first year I didn't tap until, geez, I think it was probably the last week in March, the beginning of April.
Yeah, I want to say it right, because I did find one video online of someone doing it, and it didn't say where they were or much information. They just showed them tapping the tree.
Yeah.
It basically was a how-to on how to tap a tree, which I didn't care about, but I noticed it was a sycamore that they were tapping. And there was... the understory plants in the background
were all green.
Well, just barely, like the squirrel's ear, you know, just starting to break bud.
See
so
it, yeah.
That's got to be April.
Yeah.
I don't know where they were, but April here, first week.
So I skipped a year, and then the next year was the year you were doing it, and I tapped some trees, and that's the time I burnt it. And last year I didn't tap.
No, neither did I.
I didn't tap any sycamore last year. I get these incredibly busy times in my life, and I just, because these are, you know, I just do it for the, you know, just to do it. But we're talking about tapping sycamores, and I'll let you know how that works out this year.
Yeah.
I have some enormous trees down by, you know, Big Rocks and that whole area that I have permission to tap. And when they run, boy, they run. But I'm not sure why they dry up, and they don't run like maples or birches.
They're unpredictable.
I'm really not sure why they don't.
And when I did it, I did it through January and February, but that was 2018 was a very warm winter.
Yeah.
Everybody was making maple syrup at that time. So it was that kind of weather.
Yeah.
And they would run, but not great. And it would be unpredictable. Like, it would be thawed and they're not running. And then it'd be thawed for 3 days and they ran. Or it'd be thawed for a half a day and they ran. Or they didn't. I just couldn't put a finger on it. But.
Well, I checked them one day. I mean, that stuff that I brought to you to have put through the reverse osmosis, I think it was below freezing, and it was kind of snowing, freezing rain.
So right at that 33 degree line.
I check them every day on my way back from the mill, and I'm running around with a flashlight looking at the buckets, and I said, oh, damn, I have to gather tonight. And then I called you about 7 o'clock or something, and I said, geez, I got all this sap, and we ran it through. But, yeah, then I burnt it. But this year I hope to get something that's a little better than that.
Well, Gary's on every third Wednesday, so if you're going to tap mid-March, end of March, so third week, third Wednesday in April, we'll have a report for you.
we'll figure that, hopefully, and it'll taste like butterscotch.
I hope so.
The first batch I made was so good, and I had Joe Hewitt. I'll never forget Joe because I just love Joe. But anyway, he come to the house and he wanted to get a piece of wood from me for making something, and I brought him out and we're talking. I said, "Geez, Joe, I got something I want you to taste." I brought him in the house and I put some on a teaspoon. He tastes it. My God, what the hell did you do? Melt down a butterscotch candy? And I said, "No, that's sycamore sap." He said, you can get sap, sycamore syrup. He said, you can make syrup from sycamore? And so when you can teach Joe Hewitt something, then you really feel proud. Because he knows everything about nature and trees and all that. But not everything. We can't all know everything, that's for sure. But we're talking about cottonwood tonight.
Yeah, well, if you want to learn more about maple sugaring, we're going to have Catskill Forest Association is having a backyard maple sugaring demonstration and talk at Mike Porter's property in Margaretville on February 27th. You can sign up through Catskill Forest Association's website.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
CatskillForest.org, and I'll be there to talk about that. But, yeah, you're right, cool. Gary. We're not talking about syrup tonight. We're talking about cottonwood trees.
Cottonwoods, yep.
We're far off topic already.
Yeah. But anyway, cottonwoods are fast-growing, like to grow by the rivers. We have a fair amount, and I don't know. We don't have as much as, further up north in Albany and that area, and actually down, south, too, along the Hudson and that, they grow.
Yeah,
huge.
You get into big river valleys is where you're going to find them. There's a little bit along the East Branch that I've heard of, haven't seen.
Well, there's some right by Margaretville. There's about six or eight on the way to the mill that grow along the bank there, and along with the willows, the creek willow, not a weeping willow, but
yeah. Black willow.
Black willow.
Yep.
Yeah, and they grow pretty much, but if you see a black willow, it's usually all twisted and mangled, and it looks like something out of a spooky movie. But the cottonwoods they're straight, and they grow pretty good size. I had a pair that they just happened, I bet it's been maybe 14 years now, 15 years ago. I had these two cottonwoods that started down just below my gallery, maybe 150 feet down into the on the flat there, and I mow that whole area every summer and keep it knocked down, and I saw these two little trees sprouting, and first I didn't know what they were, and I said, but they were looked like I had transplanted them there, and they're about 30 feet tall. In 14, 15 years, and they're so, the bowl is, there's sun all the way around these things, nothing's intimidating them for growth, and I guess they need a fair amount of sun to grow, but, you get a lot, like a maple tree, if you get a lot of sun around it, 8 feet up, the limbs will start. There's no limbs on these for 10, 12, maybe 14 feet.
Well, there was probably some limbs on it when it was real young, and then they shed off. But, yeah, it's a very shade-intolerant tree. That's why you find it in full sunlight. And,
yeah.
I think that's,
yeah, they like it growing there.
And that's a reason why they like these floodplains, is a lot of other trees get wiped out, and they get the sunlight that they need for, and they can tolerate that type of soil. They're extremely fast-growing. At their peak, you know, under right conditions, they can gain an inch in diameter a year and up to 5 feet of growth a year or more in rare cases. But
these are very healthy, and I like them. But, you know, they're called cottonwood because in the spring, it kind of looks like dandelion dander all in the air. They have the same kind of consistency when they seed out. And, you know, I remember my son Matt lived up in Albany, and you know, he moved since, but we used to go to the park by his house, and there was both sides of the street, there was cottonwoods. And in the spring when we went to the park, it looked like snow. I mean, there's so much of it. It was like inches thick, 3-4 inches thick of the stuff, and it would just be on the ground. And you know, you walk on the sidewalk, and it kind of looked like snow, but it was, you know, warm and fluffy. But, you know, and it's very, it's highly flammable. So, you know, and if you're under some cottonwoods and you have a campfire, you want to collect all that around. And I was talking to my son Mitch last night, and we were talking about, you know, going to do cottonwood tonight. And
yeah.
He said, yeah, they had a, down by him last year, they had this special forecast when the cottonwoods were that people, you know, if you're going to have a fire on your lawn, wherever you got that stuff around, rake it up and get it far away from the fire, or just put it in a bucket or a bag and, you know, start your fire with it. But, you know, if it gets, you know, a spark starts it, it'll start on fire fast and spread like wildfire.
Hmm. So yeah, I didn't really think of that.
You got to really be careful with that.
Yeah, you're not kidding about, you know, how much they can really flower. First time I ever noticed them, I guess I was a teenager at some point. Went to Cedar Point in Ohio. There's a big amusement park out there. A lot of big roller coasters. So anyway, we're out there, and the whole parking lot, big parking lot, was coated in cottonwood flowers.
Yep.
So that's when I noticed it.
Yeah, and it's I guess I'm not allergic to it, but it don't seem to have a lot of pollen in it. It seems to hold it into the what's that stuff called? I just say dandelion. It's the same thing, because in the spring you'll see it flying through the air. I mean, when you drive down Route 28, and you folks that do that a lot, and you're coming into Margaville in the spring, and you see those, there's maybe 6 or 8 of them right by between the Route 28 and the Binnakel parking lot along by the river. And when you're driving down the road, you're going to drive through this stuff coming off the trees that it kind of looks like snow coming down.
Yeah, sometime
and anybody I ever talked to, they say, oh, man, the dandelions are really, you know, throwing their seeds out this year. And I said, dandelion seeds don't reach 20, 30 feet in the air. they're coming down from up high, so that's the cottonwoods. And I said, you know, you'll see it coming off the tree if you just, you know, study it. But I remember times in the spring driving to the mill, and, I mean, it's... You drive down to that one little corridor, and there's 6 or 8 in a row there, and it's just like driving through, you know, a little miniature snowstorm. And when they seed out, I mean, I think within 2 weeks they pretty much, you know, drop all that their seeds, and that's how they they get spread, as they float around for miles in the air and then
by the wind.
Land somewhere. Wind, yeah.
And float down the rivers too.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Well, its scientific name is Populus deltoides. It's in the willow family, and deltoides means triangular leaf. So It's got a very large leaf compared to like
the poplars, yeah.
The other poplars. So that's just one thing you might hear it as a poplar. Well,
yeah.
Trembling aspen is another one people call poplar, right? Trembling aspen's got a leaf maybe 2 inches round.
Yeah.
Large tooth aspen might be bigger, is bigger than that in tooth, but still round. But the cottonwoods are going to be more of a triangular shape and even larger still.
Right, yeah.
3 to 4 inches sometimes, and big teeth on it. So you might recognize it that way.
Yeah. And it looks like kind of, I know the bark on it, I don't know, it's kind of looks like white oak almost.
It's, yeah, but it's got very furrowed bark,
right,
compared,
yeah,
to white oak. Deep furrows.
Deep
and
furrows,
high ridges.
Yeah. Well, because it grows so fast, but
yeah,
at a distance you look at it, it's got the same color.
Right.
As a white oak, basically. And but you get up close, and actually if you look up the tree, you can, I mean, it's not shaped at all like a white oak. I mean, the white oaks, they have a certain, you know, by looking at trees and studying them so much, you know, not from books, just by out in the bush and looking at them, every tree has its own shape. And, you know, I don't even have to have a leaf on it or see the bark, and I can at a distance see the shape of a tree, and I know it's an elm, or I know it's an oak. You know, maybe I'm not exactly sure what type of oak, and, you know, the maples have their own distinct shape to them. Even though some are similar, for the most part, they all have a certain, you know, aura and shape about them, and you know, each family has their own kind of distinctive, you know, traits that they carry on through their genes, I guess.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, and
I mean, you mentioned elm. That's why they're planted as street trees so often. They have take on the shape of a vase. Not a lot of low branches, and
I call them an umbrella.
Umbrella, same yeah, thing, same general shape. And you can fit power lines underneath them.
Yeah.
With minimal pruning. That's,
right,
that's why,
yeah,
they were so popular.
Yeah, that was, yeah. But that's in the past. And,
you're listening to From the Forest every Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m. We talk about a different forest-related topic. Tonight is the third Wednesday of the month, so we're talking to Gary Mead of Gary Mead Gallery in Margaville, and we're talking about cottonwood trees.
A hardwood tree. They are a hardwood.
They blew up the chicken man in Philly last night, and they blew up his house too. Down on the boardwalk, they're ready for a fight. Gonna see what them racket boys can do. Now there's trouble busting in from out of state, and the DA can't get no relief. Gonna be a rumble on the promenade, and the gambling commissioner's hanging on by the skin of his teeth. Everything dies, baby, that's a fact, but maybe everything that dies someday comes back. Put your makeup on, fix your hair up pretty, and meet me tonight in Atlantic City. Man can pay, so I threw out what I had from the Central Trust, and I bought us 2 tickets on that Coast City bus. Everything dies, baby, that's a fact, but maybe everything that dies someday comes back. Put your makeup on, fix your hair. Yeah.
All right, you're listening to WIOX Community Radio on 91.3 FM. This is From the Forest, where every Wednesday we talk about a different forest-related topic, and every third Wednesday we speak with our friend Gary Mead of Gary Mead Gallery in Margaretville about a different Catskill tree, and tonight we're talking about cottonwood. So, Gary.
It is a hardwood.
It is a hardwood, but it's a soft hardwood.
It's a softer hardwood.
There are harder softwoods.
Yes, there are.
Yeah, maybe you should talk about that, actually, Gary, because I hear that so much, and maybe you can explain that.
The yellow pine and Scotch pine are harder.
Hemlock's harder, way harder.
Well, with age. Yeah. We always called hemlock hem oak.
No, it's true. Yes, it starts out soft. And
it starts out soft.
Hearts when it dries.
Yeah, the older it gets, it becomes... I mean, you get in some of these old pine floors that you find in houses, and you know, you pull them up, and they reclaim a lot of it, and it's just like running hardwood through your planer or your molder, because it is tough, and it gets harder with age. Soft maple gets harder with age. I'm not sure. Some woods get lighter with age. Some get darker with age. It's a bouquet of stuff out there, really. But the cottonwood, I'm not sure what that does with age, but I know it's good for moldings. And you know, I was talking to Ryan that, you know, there's a sawmill over on Southside Road for many, many years, Fairburns, and you know, he had he probably sawed 30 years ago, that was a lot, 30 to 40,000 board feet a day through that mill. And you know, he had he didn't have a pallet mill there, but he made pallet lumber that he sent to the mills. And you know, if he got a sycamore log or a poplar log or a basswood log or any of those softer woods, like the cottonwoods, he'd run them through. And he made the tops of the decks for the pallets. All his cans, because he never... Once he put the pallet cutting mill in, he didn't sell cans anymore. Because before that, he used to, you know, 6x6s, 6x8s, whatever the, you know, the heart of the tree, whatever was left when they... You know, finished. You know, they cut down to 2 common. Anything lower than that, they put through the pallet mill. And before he put the pallet cutting mill in, he used to sell the cans to pallet mills. But he would get almost twice the money for his cans after just putting them through. But you know, he had gang saws where he'd take an 8x8 and send it through, and it'd spit boards out the other end. But you know, all the cottonwoods and like that, because he took everything. He would put, you know, all the poplars and willows and all. He bought everything. He had that stuff bought. He didn't pay much for it when it come in, but, you know, he'd make a little something on it. And, you know, if people wanted to cut off the property, he sure did buy it, but... You know, that they made that for the top of the decks, and then he would, for the 1.5 by 3.5 for the frame of the pallet. There's 3 on each pallet. They were all made out of hardwood,
oak or
yeah,
whatever they were cutting, right?
Yep, yep. Hmm. Yeah, they got loads of oak and maple and you know the ash and all that were. Yeah, and if they didn't have the softer woods, they'd run the hardwoods through, you know, for the 3/4 boards for the top and bottom. But cottonwood is it's a light wood. It's light in color. It kind of has a very, it's white almost. It's a cream, not creamy. It's kind of an off-white. But when you get into the hard, it has it's like sycamore. I'm not sure if too many of you folks know what sycamore looks like, but sycamore is it's very similar from a distance of sycamore. When you get up close, you can see the different changes in direction and the grain and that, but, you know, it has a kind of an orange heart like sycamore does. because you get into the heart with a sycamore, and it's orange, and so is the cottonwoods. But the cottonwood is, it's easy to saw, but it's not as, you know, it's easy to dry as well, but it has a little bit of a, I mean, it likes to have a, I guess from being around water, when you dry it, it seems to want to twist a little bit. Not near as bad as the willows. Willows, they just like to twist and warp, and, you know, they'll turn S shapes and they'll cup, and they dance a lot when they're getting dried. But cottonwoods is a little more relaxed than that. It's if I'm going to compare it to something else, it would be like a basswood. But basswood's very forgiving, easy to work. Cottonwood is in between the willows and the basswood. Basswood, you can't. I've never seen that. I'm sure some trees have, but I've never seen lumber when I'm drying it or doing anything with basswood that twists and warps. It lays flat, and it just—it's a very kind of a relaxed lumber. Cottonwood, on the other hand, is a little bit has a little bit more stress factor to it. And another thing I want to bring to your folks' attention is, in my years of doing what I'm doing, I have come to realize, probably this was maybe 10 or 15 years ago, any tree that grows along a river likes water. So when you harvest them and you put them in your house, use them in your bathroom. Use them in your kitchen where you're cooking. There's a lot of steam, and they don't get cranky. They like that better.
What trees come to mind that you've used?
Butternut, sycamore, white oak, what else? And black locust. Black locust is good outdoors and indoors. I mean, that's one of the premier woods. I just started learning about black locust maybe 5 or 6 years ago, and what a staple wood that is. It's amazing, that wood. It's like a piece of iron. I have samples in the gallery, and that makes me realize what I should do. I should take the same size board, and I'm going to do this too. And in my gallery, I'm going to take a 3/4 1" by 4" by 3" or 4" board out of all the species and line them up. And I have samples in there, little squares that are on, you know, blocks on the wall with the bark and what the wood looks like. But I have this piece of black locust in my gallery. And when people come in, I say, this is black locust. And I'm trying to educate people on that because, you know, I get excited. And I want more people to know, because the more people to know, then the better this tree will be respected and treated. So anyway, they pick the thing up, and it's like when they go to pick it up, it almost stays on the floor, and, you know, it slips through their fingers because they're not expecting some. It's as heavy as steel.
Wow.
And, I mean, you can, it'll last 100 years outdoors, but cottonwood, I don't think it would last 5 years outdoors. You can use it for wall studs. And it's good for molding. It's good for floor joists. It's got a cross grain strength that it's not quite as high as cross grain strength. What is that? All right. Well, I discovered a book maybe 35, 40 years ago when I first started getting into woodwork. I did a lot more reading on it and trying to figure out, you know, make sure I wasn't going to do something wrong, or, you know, I need to understand it. So grain strength is they do a test with wood. They take a 1x1, it could be a 2x2, it could be, you know, just a square, and they have these two pillow blocks that sit so far apart, and then they have this blunt instrument, a hydraulic press that comes down, and it will measure the strength of the cross grain of this wood, and it measures it in pounds. So when it breaks, that's the cross grain strength. They push on it until it breaks. Some woods don't break. They just bend and they split a little bit. I mean, basswood's one of them. If you get basswood wet, you can almost tie the board in a knot. But anyway, that's cross grain strength. So the cross grain strength basswood is about the same weight. And then, you know, wood is also measured by weight. And when I'm shipping stuff out of the mill, whether it's green or kiln dried, I have to know in each pallet what each pallet weighs. And you can estimate it. I never had a pallet scale because I didn't need one. You know, if I was cutting cherry or oak or maple, hard maple and soft maple are different. So you take an average. Green, white oak, is probably 4.5 pounds a board foot. That's a 12 by 12 by 1 inch thick. But, you know, you get into the, and that's not green, that's dry. I think it's about, I have to get the scale out, but I think it's about 6 to 6.5 pounds wet. And that's per board foot. So, you know, like the cottonwood, green, that might be 3.5 pounds a board foot. And when it's green. When you dry it, it might be 2 pounds a board foot.
Wow.
So when you're shipping this stuff, but, you know, basswood the same way. But the cross-grain strength of basswood is twice as much of that as because of the cellular structure. You know, some trees, when they grow, the cells are very short and they just attach to one another. But then there's these other ones like the red oaks and the basswood. They're long fibers that are just like string. Hickory's like that too. So the cross grain strength of hickory would be 4 times that of cottonwood and 3 times stronger than basswood. And cherry, but see, they don't only take one, they don't do one test. They run 1,000 of these things through, and then they take an average because they test the sapwood, they test the heartwood, and then the outer sap is actually the weakest part of the tree. Once you get into the, they call it sapwood, is before the heart. That's medium strength, but the heartwood is always the strongest. But it's the most unpredictable. The heart of every tree that is harvested, 30% of it is low grade, because the heart of that tree, and that's, what you use for, bridge planking, stuff like that, because it's super strong. I think they even, when they're doing these bridges and tunnels, going down to the city for the water supply, they use poplar, basswood, all that stuff. And if the white oak, they'll use an 8x8. If it's and these engineers, they know what strength of wood is. So if they're getting a load of, the sawyer says, I just got a bunch of cottonwood in, and how do you want us to cut it? And they'll say, well, make them out, 8x12s instead of 8x8s. Well, we need that extra 4 inches for the strength on it. and it'll be equal to the strength of an 8x8 and a different kind of wood. But as far as outdoor, you can't really put cottonwood outdoors for too long. It'll gray up and it gets into, it starts growing mold right away, and it will stain first. And actually, after a year outside, it would probably almost look like a spalt, almost, even after it was cut and dried, because the mold gets in there and it does all kinds of. I like mold and defects, and I think it's beautiful and pretty. And you know, I had somebody go through the gallery today, and I have Regal from the Forest, which is made out of, I don't know if anybody's familiar with our diseased beech nuts, but beech trees. But, you know, we got the bark disease. And on this one particular piece I made, for the hat and coat hooks, I took beech nut and peeled the bark and, you know, smoothed it off and, you know, this guy was an artist from down in Phoenicia Way, and he goes, "Oh, my God, that's so beautiful." And I said, "Well, most people will burn that before they even give it a second glance." But I see beauty in stuff like that. And not only do I see the end result of the beauty and stuff. When you're looking at it on the tree, you can't see it, but you know, I have this inner sense to say, geez, you clean that up and whatever. And you know, most people look at that. They think it's some special wood I had imported from, you know, some other country somewhere. I don't know. But no, I said that grows right out in the backyard here.
Yeah.
And I'm all pro, you know, American wood. We have the best wood in the world here. And, you know, cottonwood is in the family. And you know, it's a very desirable tree. And, I mean, a lot of people they ask me all the time, you know, what would you put next to your house? And I said, I wouldn't grow a big tree next to my house. I mean,
that's right.
It's so intimidating. Why would you want this monstrous thing? Put it far enough away from the house so if the wind blows and you have a storm and lightnings, you know, the weather, especially these days, is so unpredictable, and, you know, you have these people that come up, and, you know, they really just don't know, and, you know, they'll clear out a little spot in the middle of the forest, and they'll put this little house there, and, you know, I've seen it plenty of times where, you know, a storm will come through, and this huge monster, they're beautiful trees, yes, but, you know, cut them back away from your house. Don't plant trees close to your house because they don't do well. I mean, shrubs, bushes, you know, anything you can kind of prune and keep, you know, if you want a little bit of shade, I mean, you may have to walk a few hundred feet to go get shade, but, you know, don't plant trees next to your house. They give you all kinds of problems, and, you know, you know, the leaves and the pollen does more damage than leaves on people's roofs because it sits there you know, it starts a mold. And, you know, the cottonwood, for instance, that'll fill your gutters right up. And
little flowers, right?
It starts growing stuff in there. Yeah. And, you know, that you don't want. Trees are, they're one of our best assets in the world. But, you know, don't put them by your house, and, you know, keep your house clear and free of them, because they hurt your pipes, they hurt your drainage, and they will destroy your foundation, and you know, your driveway too. The same thing will happen. I mean, you're going to put a lot of work into planting and growing a tree, and like 30 years later you planted it too close to your driveway. Now the roots are coming up through the driveway, and you know, you're either cutting them or having the driveway redone, and then, you know, one side of your tree will die. So, you know, that stuff like that doesn't work. But cottonwood's a beautiful wood. If you ever get a chance, you know, go out and And look at, I mean, they're tall, beautiful. They grow pretty straight, and they're actually beautiful. And there's in between, you know, Fresh Town and the car wash right along that ridge. There's 8 or 10 of them that grow through there. And if you just want to, you know, stop and look at them, and you can actually pick them out in the spring when they're seeding out, because I mean they have lots of like I say, it looks just like snow coming off them. But
well, Gary, we've only got a few minutes left. Do you have a poem you wanted to read?
Oh, I do. I wrote a poem this week.
Excellent.
There's so a lot of disturbance in our atmosphere these days, and you know, I have all these people talking about, you know, happiness and this and that. So I wrote this 1:30, 21, 10 o'clock at night, and it's called Happiness Seeds. Searching for happiness everywhere that we go, looking in every corner, looking down every road, under the bed or in the attic, seems nowhere to be found. Tops of mountains searching, buses, airports, and subways, in big cities and in small towns. After hearing public news, nope, no happiness there. In a river, possibly, or high in a tree, under the porch, maybe. Misplaced happiness seeds, think about all the places happiness seeds could be. One thing, single thing in common, every place that one searches, hearts are always with us. Every single place we go, happiness seeds are in our hearts, wanting to be discovered, then released. Kindness holds the keys that unlocks happiness seeds. Unlock, plant, and sow some, transplanting them into the soul. Happiness plants will eternally grow. Seeds are there to plant and sow. Seeds with us everywhere we go. Unlock, plant, and sow some. Be kind, then witness happiness as it grows, peace and love. And that's my poem for the night, folks.
Well, thanks for that, Gary.
You're welcome. So try to be happy. It's a very trying time out there. And, you know, we all like to get angry, but, you know, being angry it makes us not so positive. We have to be more than ever positive right now. This is a very positive time in our life. I have never in my 66 years been so confused about anything, everything that's going on. It's just like, but I harness the happy side of stuff, and it gets me through. Because I don't want to become depressed, and I don't want to think that the world's going to end tomorrow or millions of people are going to die from something. It makes no sense to me. If it happens, we'll deal with it then. But, you know, we're in a cautious state. And, you know, grab all the good things in life and just stay happy, for crying out loud. It's really easier than being depressed and upset and, you know, climbing into a hole somewhere. And, you know, I'm not a social butterfly by any means. And I just, you know, my audience is my art and my wood. I mean, I just love, I'm very fortunate to love wood with every muscle in my being. And it's very exciting. Every day's exciting to get up and, you know, see another piece and be able to touch it and work it and look at it and say, oh, man, I never knew that yesterday, but today I know it. It's awesome.
Well, if anyone out there wants to check out Gary's work, Gary Mead Gallery in Margaretville, he's got a website, gary-mead.com.
Yep.
Check him out and stop by.
I write educational children's books as well. So, peace, everybody.
Good night, everyone. This was From the Forest on WIX 91.3 FM.
His tears fell on the sidewalk as he stumbled in the street. A dozen faces stopped to stare, but no one stopped to speak. For his castle was a hallway, and the bottle was his friend.
stumbled in from the forest. Up a dark and dingy staircase, the old man made his way, his ragged coat around him as upon his cot he lay. And he wondered how it happened that he'd ended up this way, getting lost like a fool in the forest. And as he lay there sleeping, a vision did appear. Upon his mantle shining, the face of one so dear, who'd loved him in the springtime of a long forgotten year, when the wildflowers did bloom in the forest. She touched his grizzled fingers and she called him by his name. And then he heard the joyful sound of children at their games in an old house on a hillside in some forgotten town, where the river runs down from the forest. Jet soars above the canyon streets, and the con men con, but life goes on, for the city never sleeps. And to an old forgotten soldier, the dawn will come no more. For the